Protests are contagious across the Middle East and North Africa, and economic effects are even more so.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Now the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. Just moments ago, the credit rating agency Standard & Poor's downgraded Libya's debt. The violence and unrest there has oil companies such as Shell and BP moving foreign workers out of the country. Marketplace's Stephen Beard connects the dots from Libya's oil to gasoline stations around the world and the global financial recovery.
Some economists are beginning to fret. They say that before the current crisis, we had a whole series of supposedly temporary hikes in the price of oil and other commodities. There could come a time when those hikes start to look permanent. Companies will decide to push up their prices to cover the increasing cost of fuel and other raw materials. Professor Dominic Swords of the Henley Business School.
The longer and the more spikes and temporary blips we have, I think our worry is that the expectations of continued inflation of commodity prices as well as oil prices gets built into the system.
And he says central banks may conclude these higher prices are permanent. To curb the inflation, they'll have to push up the cost of borrowing. And that could bring the global recovery to a juddering halt. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Let's get a little more perspective on this and dig deeper into how long the economic repercussions will last. The BBC's Chloe Arnold is with us from Algiers, Algeria, this morning. Hello, Chloe.
Hello, Steve.
Is there any suggestion right now that oil production could be hit permanently because of what's going on in Libya?
I don't think people are getting too many jitters just yet because, of course, if they do need to increase capacity, OPEC is in a position to do that. They can simply ask, for example, the Saudi Arabians to turn on the oil taps and increase capacity. But certainly, if this situation continues, then there are going to be concerns over what might happen generally to oil production.
Apart from oil and gas, what other industries contribute to the economy of the region there?
Very little, I have to say. Libya and Algeria, which is, of course, where I am, are primarily exporters of oil and gas. There's a tiny amount of date production and a very, very small amount of fisheries as well. I think they export river eel to the European Union. But if we talk about other countries in the region, Morocco, Tunisia and Egypt, there is an enormous tourism industry. And there's great concern, I think, that tourists are just very reluctant to come back. For those countries, there will be concerns for the economy.
The BBC's Chloe Arnold with us from Algiers. Chloe, thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Goodbye.
And by the way, trading, oil trading, is above $92 a barrel right now. So let's do some numbers. Well, global markets are mostly lower right now. In Europe, on average, about 1%. Asian stocks tanked after Moody's rating service cut Japan's outlook and said a further downgrade is possible there. Home Depot said today profit rose more than 70% in the last 3 months. Chesapeake Energy says it's going to sell a huge natural gas field to BHP Billiton for more than $4.5 billion. No trading yesterday on Wall Street for President's Day. Everyone, though, is back to business today.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Allianz, insuring more than 75 million customers worldwide and providing retirement solutions through its affiliated companies in the U.S., AllianzUSA.com. And by Chevrolet, maker of the new Volt, which plugs in anywhere and goes everywhere. Available in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com.
It's been a pretty tumultuous winter fishing season in France. French fishermen have even gone on strike opposing a European-wide ban limiting the export of eels. The restrictions are aimed at conserving the species, but and that's in steep decline across Europe and in Britain. Christopher Worth reports.
A good place to begin this story is here, at this old traditional jellied eel shop in London's East End, where owner Bob Cook is dishing out my first ever bowl of stewed eels.
There's your eels there.
I couldn't bring myself to order the jellied ones. They just looked too slimy.
Parsley sauce. How's that for you?
Eels used to be a cheap, popular dish among London's working poor. But these days, Cook's shop is usually empty.
Look at the time. 12:15. You're my first customer.
Today, the demand for eels comes from aquaculture farms in China, where a pound of live baby eels from Europe can fetch as much as $500. Lucrative for fishermen, but worrying for conservationists like Heidi Stone of the UK's Environment Agency. She says the number of baby eels returning from the open seas has dropped over 90%, and no one is sure why.
It's not one thing. It's going to be a combination of factors. Climate change, overfishing, lack of habitat.
As a result, the European Union banned the export of eels last year. That meant fishermen in France, where most eel fishing takes place, were making a lot less money, and they weren't happy about it. But here at one of the last remaining eel fisheries in the UK, owner Peter Wood is happy the ban is in place.
This fishery has been very good to the people working in it, and we need to make sure that it's available for future generations.
Most of his eels go towards restocking Europe's depleted waterways, but he says the demand from China has driven up the cost of eels and that kind of restoration.
It has simply just been a take process to Asia.
Here in Europe, the EU lifted the ban for a few months last year under pressure from the French fishing industry. Now the ban is back in place. Wood says this time he hopes it sticks. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
And finally, it's amazing how video games have changed over the years. This is, of course, what I remember playing as a kid. I heard that sound a lot, as a matter of fact. The Smithsonian Museum will choose from hundreds of games, including earlier games such as Pac-Man and more recent ones like Halo 2, for an exhibit it's putting together next year. Video games as artistic medium. I can just see it now. Ooh, that Space Invaders has such color and depth. You can vote for which games should be included in the exhibit. We have a link to that at our website, marketplace.org. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles, on Twitter at Radio Chio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The typical career of an NFL player is about 4 years, so a lockout is more than just a contract dispute. It could mean idling for a quarter of your career.
So when you talk about taking benefits and taking money away and not having a season, that's not sitting good with me.
I'm Tess Vigeland, the Freakonomics of Football, next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.